right. Welcome to another episode of the All 80s Rock and Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Christopher Neal. Thanks for hanging in there. Hope you're enjoying the episodes right here, 4680Q. You can check them out Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., 4680Q.com. And we do it, we try to do it each and every week. We've been rather successful doing it that way. Our success might be short term. We don't know. My co-hosts on this show include rock frontman Bobby R. Rock. It's been like 14 years Bobby and I have played in a band together, something like that. It's time for me to move on. And of course, none other than Michael Hansen, one of the co-writers on this great song that you're listening to right now. He is a co-founding member of the band Glass Tiger with Alan Frew. And what does he have? 5 Juno Awards, bastard. Multiple songwriting awards, multi-platinum and gold records, 14 hit singles in the 80s. And as mentioned, co-writer of this song that you're listening to. Also of I Will Be There, I'm Still Searching, Someday. Band had some killer albums in the 80s, that's for sure. So today's episode of All 80s Rock and Talk, we talk about lead vocalists, lead singers. For example, I know Bruce Springsteen is a huge influence on Bobby Rock. Okay, maybe not. But anyway, we're going to get into all that. And it's actually broken down into 3 parts with the 3 of us. Your favorite front person, singer, vocalist, whatever you want to call them. The cassette chat, you know, what you were listening to on cassette, because we all had cassettes in the 80s listening to our Walkmans. Michael had some yellow thing in case he was deep sea diving, you know, those waterproof ones, whatever. But we get into cassette chat. And then lastly, a segment called Tiger Tales. You know, Michael has so many great stories from Glass Tiger and being on the road and just stories in general. And you're going to find out on this episode how we met Alan Frew and how Alan became the singer of Glass Tiger. It's all coming up. And of course, we have an interview segment. Featured interview today is Dale Bozzio, good friend of mine, Dale Bozzio from Missing Persons in the 80s. And we're going to chat with her. I deeply love Dale Bozzio. We'll find out if she loves me. More on that coming up. Stick around, 4680Q, All 80s, Rock and Talk, baby.
Don't forget me when I'm gone.
Activate dance mode countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Just won't connect audio, or it either gets rid. It'll bring in one guy and not another. It's just a fucking joke.
Well, the problem is, depending the quality of porn that you're watching on it, will determine how well it's going to work.
Well, I'll tell you, what I'm looking at right now isn't inspiring.
You know, it's funny because Bobby has a beer, you have wine, and I've got coffee. I'm responsible.
And I've got a beer, so cheers.
Hey, and you guys are outside.
Yeah. So I'm wearing a fucking
Michael
jacket.
And I have the right idea.
All right.
We're 3 days away from Canada. I'm wearing a parka. Canada Day. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, this is 4680Q, and this is a podcast all about the 80s. And by the way, this is so super awesome that you can now get this podcast on Spotify, on Amazon Music, on Podchasers. I haven't got it on Apple yet because they're fucking complicated, but it will be soon. So, for the millions of people that love us, they can check us out on all those platforms as well as 4680Q.com. So Michael Hansen is here and Bobby R. Rock. So welcome once again, gentlemen. Glad to see you both.
Hello.
Cheers.
How's it going, bud?
So today I thought of the topic of vocalists or singers. So we'll make this really easy. And we have 3 segments that Bobby was kind enough to put together. that we can go through. The first one is going to be your favorite. So you're going to talk about some of your favorite vocalists, singers, lead person of the 80s. Doesn't matter what year. The second one is called Cassette Chat. Maybe some cassettes that you had in your Walkman listening to said artist. And the last part will be Tiger Tales, where we dive in a little bit to what was going on in the mind of Michael Hansen and, of course, Glass Tiger that are relevant to the topic. Like maybe Michael
Tiger Tales. What do you think of that, Michael?
Did you say that are irrelevant to the topic? Because that makes more sense. Yeah, I got some Tiger Tales, Bobby. No problem, man.
And we're gonna debate. Maybe you should have been the lead singer of the band, but that's a topic for later on.
Oh, that's a beauty. I love that one.
Okay, so Bobby, we're gonna start with you. For your favorite vocalist, front person, doesn't have to be any specific genre. Just give me a few and tell me why you love them.
Well, I'm telling you, you don't have to look much further than Steve Perry as being, you know, my favorite vocalist of the 80s, which may surprise you. But you know what? He took a jazz fusion type band that Journey was and just elevated them immediately. And of course, I mean, you know, the conductor's tails that he wore, like, come on, that image was just amazing. And actually, Michael spoke about that, the previous episode. So, Steve Perry for sure. Then I'd probably have to move into John Bon Jovi, even though not technically a great singer, just one of those voices, especially back in the 80s. What a great range and tone, you know, to his voice. And, you know, Richie Sambora complimented him quite well. So there you go. Great choice. Oh, and I do have to mention the late, great Jerry McGee from Brighton Rock. That high voice in the 80s. Like,
oh, yeah. That's right. He was great. Underrated. Underrated.
You see, before Absolutely. I get to Michael, I thought you would have said Bruce Springsteen. No.
He came a close fifth.
Mr. Hansen, you must have some favorites from the decade. Tell me who they might be.
I do. I'm going to go with the females here. I'm going to say Annie Lennox, the Eurythmics. You guys were into the heavier stuff in the 80s. I was a little bit more on the pop side, shockingly, going into Glass Tiger. I was a huge Annie Lennox fan. Oddly enough, I wasn't a huge fan of the first single, Sweet Dreams Are Made Of. I mean, it's very, though, when you got to appreciate the brilliance of the songwriting, it just captivated the world in one song. So, but when she started to get into the more complicated stuff, she proved herself to be a virtuoso beyond what most people can do. And I just loved her for that. Second to that, I'm going to stay with the female side here and go with Kate Bush. I thought she was amazing. And we were with Capitol Wow. Records. So was she. She was with Capitol as well. That just came to me, man. I'm just flying off the seat of my pants here. I thought she was just incredible when she first came out. Always wanted to meet her. Never got the chance. And again, we were on the same label, so I had the benefit of being able to listen to her stuff in depth, and I was quite enamored.
What would she say right now if she saw you wearing shorts and a parka?
Wait a minute. You can see my legs?
Yeah.
Come on, man, really?
So I'm going to throw out just one, and I'm going to tell you why I'm going to throw just one. This particular singer is not only a singer, but a songwriter, plays piano, a well-known drummer, probably one of my all-time bucket list people if I could ever interview him, although at this point I don't think it would be possible. I have to say, hands down, the man who owned the 80s on the charts and in every way was Phil Collins. And like Genesis or not, because I'm not a huge Genesis fan, like per se, but when you put out the albums Face Value in 81, No Jacket in 85, but Seriously in 89, I went to Sirius Hits Live in 1990. He played at the Sky Dome then for that tour. But a guy, and I just want to say this, like 14 top 40 solo songs on the charts, 11 top 40 with Genesis, 25 solo group hit singles, 8 number ones in the UK.
Wow. And
I mentioned this to Bobby earlier. I Googled the biggest selling hit of the 80s. Okay, the biggest selling hit of the 80s. Can you guess what it could be? I mean, I know that's a shot in the dark, but
I would have said Journey.
For sure on that one. But
see, Journey's already a good. That's good. It's not right. And Mr. Bobby Rock, you know the answer, but.
Well, I guessed Michael Jackson. I think I guessed Beat It, right? But it was.
Yeah.
But here's the answer and probably the explanation. The biggest selling hit of the 80s was by Band-Aid and Do They Know It's Christmas? Because if you think about it, it's played every year, right? At Christmas time.
Oh, it is. That's decade. Right, of course.
And who played drums on the song? Phil Collins.
Phil Collins.
And yep. Phil Collins was the only guy who played at Live Aid both shows, right? In Philadelphia and then over in the UK. So I love Phil Collins. I love what he represents. I think he's got killer songs, very pop oriented, like you, like Michael. But that's my guy for the 80s. And I know that's crazy, yeah. But I think that he's the one for me. I'm going to throw out some names that are going to be caught all over and see what we got. So let's go George Michael. We'll start with Michael.
Okay.
Thoughts on him as a singer vocalist?
Oh, man. He was crazy good. Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, when he did that version of it, that was when I really knew what a great singer he really was. I didn't get the Wham thing completely, although I appreciated it, but it was just so bubblegum pop. But George Michael, when he came up with Faith, is still a song. Faith is still a song that I play with my band. Got a band called Landing 73 because I lived in Hall Landing. I grew up there. We do Faith as as one of the songs in our set. So definitely one of the most talented vocalists in the world. He looked fantastic. He sang fantastic. I loved him as he got into his solo stuff. Father figure, got to that phase and all that. I realized what a talented guy this really was. I'm a big fan.
And Mr. Rock?
Yeah, he's definitely, very unique in his voice. And I like the fact of what he did solo wise, and then kind of going over into Wham, being multi-directional. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan, but I could definitely appreciate why he was so talented.
Yeah.
So when I would go through the 80s and the hits of the 80s, a lot of these names came up, like Whitney Houston, Tina Turner, Madonna. Talking about females, maybe Michael, you can pick one or two or whatever. What were your thoughts on them? I mean, I listened to Top 40 radio. So Private Dancer, when it came out in 84 by Tina Turner, was out there. Whitney Houston was all over the charts, obviously. And Madonna with Like a Virgin in 84. I remember in high school listening to it because I wanted to date some girl who I was hoping I was going to take her virginity. I don't know if that ever happened. So Mike, we'll start with you.
Oh, man, Madonna changed my life when I heard Like a Virgin. And well, it's more particularly when I saw the video and I saw those eyebrows. I lost my mind when I saw those eyebrows. I was in. I was completely invested. I was just like, oh, my God. She just looked like I think she was like every man's fantasy at that point. She, every guy loved her. And as she started to get into later records, I'm struggling to think of Like a Prayer. That record blew my mind. I mean, I can remember opening up, I can't remember if it was the cassette or the album. It actually had her perfume infused into the label.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
The first, like, I don't know, a million copies or something. And I was going, oh, it smells fantastic. This is great. She's right here, you know. Oh yeah, I was obsessed with Madonna. I thought she was brilliant, and she got into her later stuff, and I thought it was actually still very good. But really, the Like a Prayer phase to me was absolutely wonderful. And Tina Turner, we were fortunate enough to tour with her in
yeah, I thought so, right?
Europe, yeah. She and we each got to meet her individually. She had a handler, and so they would come out and go, Michael Anson, it's your turn. You know, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to meet. But even though I was, she was out on the stage and we were there with her, we never, she'd get hustled off so fast, you wouldn't get to say a word to her. So I was lucky enough to meet her and say hello. And to this day, I'm still looking for the damn pictures and I can't fucking find them anywhere. I don't know where they went, but she's amazing. Yeah.
I haven't seen the documentary that's out on her. And of course, she just passed away recently, but that voice and just, you and what she went through in her life and her career personally and professionally, and to kind of come out as a shining star. Pretty awesome. And Mr. Rock?
You know what stands out with, like, for me with, like, the Madonnas and the Tina Turners is total package. Like, really, like, from performing to, you know, a voice that's recognizable and so different, and the confidence, and just they could not do any wrong. Like, they could take chances. Yeah. It was so cool. And I just find even nowadays in music that it's either kind of one or the other, you know, in a lot of cases, not in all cases, but you know, either they have a great voice, but you know, they just don't have that kind of, you know, performing power.
Yeah. Very true.
And back in the '80s, oh my gosh, like especially the people that and the singers that we're mentioning just had it all. And whether or not you were a big fan of them, you took notice. And that's why they were so huge.
Global phenomenons.
Let's go to cassette chat, the second segment here, and maybe something that you remember from the '80s, a cassette that you had from obviously a favorite band or artist, or you wouldn't have had it. So Michael, do you remember kind of what you would put into your Walkman or your soul? Maybe, I don't know, you put it into something.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. This one's really going off the radar here. I was on a tour bus most of the '80s, and I did have one of those yellow underwater Walkmans. You remember the Sony Sports?
Yes.
You're right. Yeah. I think they were called sports Walkman, something like that.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, the cassette that I was stuck on and listened to every day while I had my feet up at the front of the bus with our driver, his name was Bassman because he was bass in a Nashville group, big old fella. And I would listen to Rational Youth. And
wow.
I know. It's a little off the beaten path. An album called Heredity. Are you familiar with it at all?
Well, I've heard the name. I don't know the album.
Yeah, it's not all that popular. And I got stuck on that. And then because we went shopping often with Capitol Records, they would give us cassettes from record stores. I happened to come across Honeymoon Suites. I think it was their second record.
The Big and Prize?
The one with the big, it's the blue one. I can't remember the title of it, but anyway, I loved them. And I got kind of hooked on that record. I had some kind of strange choices in the '80s, but the big one for me was the Joshua Tree. When that came out, that changed my writing style. It changed everything about the way I thought about music. I believe I still haven't found what I'm looking for is off that record. Am I correct? I believe it was.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I wrote, I Will Be There for Glass Tiger, which was a big hit.
Total rip-off of the song.
kind of rip. Don't we all do that a little bit?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I still haven't found I Will Be There, you know, so I used the Tom thing. I was a big fan of the way they did the rhythms.
With Larry Mullen Jr. Yeah.
Just amazing. So Joshua Tree for me was probably the biggest record ultimately, or the cassette that I would put in that. So that yellow Walkman, yeah, for sure.
So before we get to you, Bobby, because my position here as host is to throw out crap that nobody cares about. For example, because I mentioned Phil Collins and you just mentioned you too. I looked, I don't know why, at the richest drummers in the world. I just wanted to see if you were on the list, Michael, but you're not. And this was net worth of 2023.
Thanks for pointing that out, you bastard.
There's four that were tied at $350 million. Ringo Starr, Lars Ulrich, Phil Collins, and Larry Mullen Jr.
Oh,
so that's my useless information there.
Ringo Starr should have 10 times that. He was the most brilliant drummer ever. Born.
He might, who knows? This is off the internet. So
yeah.
So Mr.
Yeah.
Rock, your turn on the cassette thing.
Okay. So I've got a story and I remember it vividly, and my choice of cassette is a little bit out in left field, but anyways, I'll share. So it was my birthday and I got one of those radio, back then they called it a ghetto blaster, right? And okay.
They did.
I couldn't wait. I played soccer that night. I was in my teens, my early teens, played soccer that night. Couldn't wait to get home. And I bought my first cassette was Judas Priest, Defenders of the Faith.
Whoa.
I know, but I love that album front to back. I love other types of music too, but that one was my like go-to. And I just remember putting it in for the first time, clicking it into the door and press and play. And having that sound. Remember the sound of the cassettes?
Oh, yes.
I remember the sound of the tape getting stuck.
Do you know what that sound is for? Does anybody know what that sound?
No.
At the beginning and the end of the tape?
No? What sound was it?
It was like a... Like it was at the very beginning. Remember?
Yes. Okay, I do.
Or am I crazy?
Well you're probably... Crazy. So what was it for?
It was almost like it was a sound tester, so you could hear the volume and adjust your volume.
Wow. Crazy? I've never heard those on my cassettes, man. That's crazy.
Well, those are just the ones that Bobby got when he was part of the Columbia House. For
$1. Oh, he had Columbia House.
Advanced demos.
We're gonna do an episode on Columbia House alone.
Oh, no.
So let's go with, are you done or are you still going?
I just wonder if I still owe Columbia House money. Yeah.
Everybody does.
I've got another cassette story. But that's
okay, go ahead.
Go for it, man.
Okay, so like another, we go into our 80s glam. I remember Motley Crue, Theater of Pain. The only reason I remember that, because it's not a great album.
It's a shitty album, that's why you remember
it. Is that it? I can still remember the smell of, and you were talking about the perfume smell.
Yeah,
this was not a perfume smell. It must have been like a
factory urine type. Or something.
I can only imagine what the smell was.
It was horrible. I can remember it to this day. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I listened to it and I went, what the hell is this?
One man's garbage is another man's treasure, you know.
So I want a couple of honorable mentions though for cassettes. It's funny. I was all over Duran Duran. So I think that a lot of the Duran Duran albums were spinning, if you will, or whatever you call it in your Walkman. Of course, Bon Jovi. I was big though into the pop stuff, and I did like Bruce Springsteen. So when Born in the USA came out in 84, even Tunnel of Love in 87, I did like them. Let's go with Tiger Tales because we don't have a lot of time here. But Michael, my question is, you know, tell the story about how you met Alan and for him to become the singer of the band. And should you have become the singer of the band since you were a singer in another band before you joined Glass Tiger? So I want to hear this story.
Yeah. And the answer is actually, no, I shouldn't have been the singer in that band because he was superb. Alan was the reason why Glass Tiger was as big as it was, I think, certainly right up there. However, at the time, it was a big decision because we, so they were in a band called Onyx, that is Alan and Wayne Parker. And I believe Al Connolly was an in and out kind of member of that band. Maybe he was there full time, but I was playing in a band called The End, and we were playing at the Compass Tavern, which was a staple of music for Newmarket, Ontario, this little plaza pub. And, we were playing there every, you know, well, at least twice a month and doing a full set of AC/DC, Rush. I was playing Tom Sawyer and singing it from behind the drum kit. And I guess Alan came by one night and had a beer there and saw me doing that. And as it turns out, I knew about him and I was unsatisfied with some of the parts or pieces of the band and how it was sounding. And I thought, you know what, if we're going to really do this, we may have to improve a little bit or at least maybe change the lineup. It's kind of like, you know, somebody firing coach and bringing in a new coach of a baseball team for fresh blood and changing up the game plan. So I thought about that and I did it. And because The End was my band to begin with that I got together. And eventually I made a phone call. I remember I was at Aurora High School and I made a phone call to Wayne Parker, the bass player for Onyx, who was Alan's best pal at the time. And I said to Wayne, I said, listen, I was like, come and join us. I know you know who we are. We're in the same town because Onyx and the End were both, or we were all from the Newmarket Holland Landing area. So we went to the same clubs. We played together in the same area. We knew about each other. And he said, well, I will come if I can bring Alan Frew. And I said, oh, you're lead singer. I said, well, I'm the lead singer of my band. But I said, you know what?
That fuck changed it. Quickly.
Just fuck it. Bring him anyway. And so when he got there and I saw Alan, he was very convincing, and he was a little larger than life. And I thought, this guy is truly a front man. So I said to him, look, man, I might want to sing a couple of songs, but let's just do this. You take the mic. I'll be the drummer. And I just want to, you know, do all the harmonies and let's make this happen. And so that became Tokyo, which ultimately became Glass Tiger. And that's how I met Alan in my living room at 448 Hill Street in Holland Landing, in my little tiny bungalow with my mom and dad. We all met him.
Nice. Cool. One other thing about Alan as a singer. So how would you sum up him as a singer front man? I know you obviously like him a lot, but what would you say if someone said, I've never heard Alan Frew sing, what's he like?
Powerful, controlled, charismatic, and engaging. Those are the four words that come to mind. And I can't think of anything outside that doesn't make up a front man.
And so, yeah. It's funny because those words that you just mentioned do not describe Bobby Rock at all.
Or me. So I'm right there with you, Bob.
All right.
What else? Some honorable mentions, though, from the 80s and singers and lead singers. And I know Bobby would agree. Bret Michaels from Poison, because not so much when Look What the Cat Dragged In came out, but more so that when the second album came out and the third album, although the third album was in the 90s. So, but I think that Bret and I was always a fan of Janie Lane. I had to tell Michael who Warrant was today. So, but Janie Lane, but right, Janie Lane. Was always, as you know, Bobby, one of my favorites. There was something magical about his presence and just how he captured the audience and how he sang the songs and how he wrote the songs, because he wrote, you know, 90% of Warrant songs. So just wanted to throw that out. We're going to play an interview with Dale Bozzio. And I did this, I don't know, about a year ago. Were you a fan of Missing Persons? Were you like, Michael, were you a fan of Missing Persons?
Missing Persons or Missing Persons?
Missing Persons, like with an S, yes,
plural.
Plural. Do you know who they are?
Not really, but I just didn't think of a heavy metal band that I loved in the 80s. The Scorpions.
Okay, let's go.
The Scorpions. Oh. I love the Scorpions. I still think, yeah, man, the solo in Blackout is still one of my favorite all-time solos ever. But Missing Persons, I didn't know much about, to be honest. I wish I could answer that. Wasn't really familiar with them as much as I was that band, for sure. I just wanted to bring that up because I haven't mentioned any heavy bands. Finally, I got one that I loved.
And
right, the Scorps.
Did you ever listen to Missing Persons? You, I'm talking. Who? You.
Bobby.
No. No.
Well, I see you on my screen, so I'm just pointing at my screen saying you.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, well. That's you, Bob.
Thanks for contributing
but
to that portion.
I love learning more about that.
Dale is wonderful. I many times over the years I've told Dale that I love her. We'll see if she loves me back in the interview. But I love you guys, and I appreciate you doing this. And it's always a lot of fun. We'll come up with another interesting topic, hopefully for next week. Michael will wear pants and a t-shirt as opposed to shorts and a parka, maybe. I don't know.
Can you really see my legs from there?
Well, I could before, but then you kind of adjusted yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you. Because you don't want to see these, believe me. I look like a flamingo.
4680Q.com. And of course, you can get all 80s rock and talk on Spotify. And Bobby Rock's a big fan of Spotify. He didn't have it in the 80s, but he has it now. So
that's right. I got you on Spotify.
Absolutely, you did.
Literally.
I know. And my daughter pays for it. I love it.
Oh, nice.
Oh, anyway. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I had nothing else to do, so this was kind of nice.
Yeah, me too.
That's crazy. Thanks, buddy. That was actually a lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
I learned it by watching you.
Pinwheel, pinwheel, spinning around.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12.
My boss is on Broadway.
Hey, you guys.
Spell circuit.
Would you
John Bell was.
This is Darkay.
Clap on, clap off.
Hi, this is Dale Bozio from Missing Persons, and you're listening to my favorite fella, Shane Christopher Neal. I love you. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you as well, and things are going well, eh? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, they're moving along.
That's awesome.
I love that name, Shane. That's my son's name, Shane.
It's a beautiful name, I know. I say it often because on radio you say your name so much, right? And so I'm like, not a bad name. And actually, my name came from my dad, who was a big fan of the cowboy show or movie Shane. So it's kind of how I got my name.
That's exactly what I named my son after, that movie.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time.
Tell your father we're thinking alike.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure to talk to you. You know, growing up in the 80s and in high school, and of course, Missing Persons, always played on the radio, and I do appreciate you doing this. My first question for you, and I know you've probably been asked this a million times, but if there's no Dale Bozio, there's no Lady Gaga. Like, right? Like, I just, and have you ever talked to her? Because you created that model for fashion and rock and roll and music and just that attitude, and things come full circle. I get it. But have you had people say that to you, and have you ever talked to her about it?
No, I met her. No, absolutely not. I don't know. She must have a stylist that likes me. I don't know her. No.
I just kind of thought that was interesting.
I don't know how it happened. You know, it seems there's a lot of references there. I get it. I don't know. It's just.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Fair enough. I just didn't know if you ever talked to her, because I mean, it's very obvious to someone like me who was around in the early 80s to see your fashion and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, you all see it differently than me, right?
So well, maybe,
that's
yeah.
the thing. Yeah, and you know, to me, that's kind of flattering in a sense. You know, that's all. That's all good.
That's good.
You know, that's what I think. I think it's, you know, when people copy what you do, that means they are trying to be like you, and that might be a compliment. I don't take it as a bad doing.
Oh, not at all.
You know, it's all good.
No, I didn't see it as bad. I was just saying that you could definitely see that. So you have a brand new book out, Life is So Strange, Missing Persons, Frank Zappa, Prince and Beyond. So, you know, a lot of people are writing books these days, and that's great because I'm a big fan of reading the books. So why a book now? And now that it is out, what did you learn about yourself in writing this? Maybe that, you know, maybe you didn't know before.
Actually, you know, I became... a little bit more empathetic to the people of my past. And I really realized how much they meant to me, and how life passes us so quickly, and we barely get to say I love you to the ones that we truly do love or care about.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, in a way, this was my, you know, thank you to a lot of people. Really, you know, in so many words, I'm not disgraceful of anyone, and, you know, including Prince. I tried to keep, you know, his secrets, and I would never want anyone to, you know, love him any less. I don't know. I you know, my relationship with Frank Zappa just strung me together. I met him when I was a little girl. I was 16 years old. And then when I was 21, he let me be on Joe's Garage as Mary. And that was a big opportunity for me. It became, people recognized that I had a little bit of talent. And so I took that, you know, as a plus. And then Frank looked at Terry Warren and I one day and said, put a band together. So that was historic right there. I couldn't say, none of us could say no. And it went further and further. And so, you know, with all of the stories and the things that I thought of, I just thought, oh, I better put this in a book before it's too late. I drop dead and someone else writes about me. That probably wouldn't be true.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. Would you say then that
break with Frank Zappa was the first big break of your career?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I came to California to be a movie star. I was Playboy Bunny of Boston for 1976.
That's right. Hefner's house. That's right.
Yeah. And so when he didn't hire me and I ended up walking on Frank, where Frank was rehearsing, and Frank said to me that day that I could, you know, be on Joe's Garage, and he hired me. And I told Frank, I said, I'm not a singer. I don't know how to sing, and I want to be a movie star. And he started laughing. So that, you know, he thought that was extremely funny. And it's pretty funny to me now, you know.
Absolutely.
So, but I really meant it. And he said, okay, well, why don't you sing this record and after that be a movie star? I said, okay. All right, I'll do that. Okay, good. That sounds good. Like I had the time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's how that happened.
And then with Missing Persons, with Warren and then Terry. So talk about how that then started. And I want to say something before you answer that. I'm a rock drummer. I've been a drummer for a long time. I'm 52 and I grew up, you know, listening to all kinds of music, and Terry was an influence on me early on, being such a great drumming style. And then of course he was like in every other modern drummer as the years went on and such. But talk about the forming of that band, because it was really special, I thought.
You know, yeah, I agree with you. Terry Bozzio is one of the greatest drummers in the world. I mean, he has developed his own sounds and drum set, and he has been doing that for many, many, many years. When I first was with Terry, I used to encourage him to teach other people how to play the drums, because he's such an incredible, as well, teacher.
Yeah.
He has such patience, which you really do have to have if you want to be a true musician. You have to be patient, you know, with everything, yourself, the music. And so he, I found his passion and never shunned that he would make his drum set larger and larger. I just thought that was just so passionate. And I say, you know, I still say the same thing, like what you did, you know, about him being such a great drummer. And then Warren, just a melody maestro. The kid writes melodies all day long.
Right.
I mean, He did beautiful, beautiful songs that he plays. So him together with Terry and then Patrick O'Hearn on bass, who was originally with Franklin the day I met him, it was pretty ironic that these genius fellows were in the Missing Persons band. And Frank said to us one day, why don't you guys put a band together? Call yourself the Missing Acute Persons. And we said, no. Warren and Terry said, no, we're the Missing Persons. And I said, missing from Frank, you know? And so that's how we got to be the Missing Persons, because nowadays, look at all the missing people, gosh.
Right.
You have Missing Persons on the internet, you go, for the Dolphins, you know? So by the way, if you want to buy my book, not you, but, you know, if people want to buy my book autographed to them, I have them available on my Facebook, which is facebook.com/DaleBozzio. And you can go there, and I have records also. And since you're talking about that, it made me think of the rare records that I can get to you, or I have. So, you know, that's happening. And this is a whole nother world since it was with Missing Persons. And so I guess it was easy to go back into the archives and see who you could look like that were hit.
Right. And you can buy it on your website, right? DaleBozzio.today. I'm there right now, and there's a chance to click and get an autographed version of the book as well.
Yeah.
Let me ask,
what the best place to go? The best place to go, because I don't know how long that's going to be up. So go to facebook.com/DaleBozzio. But you can go to .today and see how it works out. If they send you away, go to mine.
Okay, that's a good deal. Talk to me too. I've always been interested in this, especially the way that you had looked in the early 80s, and MTV was a big part of a lot of successes, I'm sure, including yours, and playing the US Festival in 83. What was that, one of the highlights of your music career? Because what a place to play.
Yeah, absolutely. There was so many people there, and we were paid more money there than we've ever been paid in our lives. And so Sure, absolutely. That was a kind of a freak moment, I believe, you know, but it actually is historic now.
Absolutely.
At the moment, it didn't seem much of anything, even though, you know, the great bands were playing and all. The stages were isolated. They didn't let people on stage. And it was really sandy and dusty and musty and all those things. And it was a sea of people, you know. It was really hot out, about 110. And wow, I mean, the sound just dispersed everywhere, and it was amazing that we sounded as good as we did.
Do you ever watch it back, like on YouTube or anything like that, or no?
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah, it doesn't matter to me, though. You know, I understand all the things that I adventured through in my life. I try to just think of, you know, the past as a learning experience, and right. It was a definite, you know, situation that, at the time, I was a young kid. That was fascinating for me.
Talk about meeting Prince. And were you involved romantically with Prince? I think. I don't know that for a fact. But and I know you were on his record label as well. So talk about that relationship and how that went.
Yes, I was. We have had a romantic time a few times together. I was his shoulder to cry on. He was a real hard nut to crack. The world loves him, and we'll leave it at that. And he gave me a record deal because he asked me what I wanted, if I wanted to marry him, and I said no. And I will take the record deal instead, door number two. Yeah. You know, so that's how that went. And I got the record deal. You know, the record's called Dale, Riot in English. It's outstanding. Robert Brookins is the producer. The background singers are fantastic, and Stephen Lukather is the guitar player. He's superb.
Absolutely.
It's a great record. Yeah, he wrote me a song also, Prince wrote me a song called So Strange. Not So Strange, So Strong. So Strong, So Strange. Life is so strange, and life is so, you know, awkward. He thought that I was awkward. He thought that I was odd. I am. And so that was okay. And then he wrote the song that said that I was so strong and that he wanted to be as strong as I was. And I was like, okay, this is...
Did you talk to him at all before he passed away, or had your relationship in any way just ended well before that?
No, our relationship ended very awkwardly. Yeah, he yelled at me and told me I was fired. And so I said, okay.
Moving on. In 2020, yeah. In 2020, you released a solo album, a second solo album. So talk about that. And are you going to keep releasing some new music, or?
I released Dreaming, a couple of songs on there I wrote, and I re-recorded some of my oldies but goodies that I really like to sing my own self on my own time, and the music that I loved in the past. I did that for myself. And other than that, I think that I'm going to make I'm working on a soundtrack to my movie. I'm going to make a movie about my life, not necessarily so much about the book, but the book and my life and other situations.
Body 680 Q.